Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. We are presented by Green Ventures Landscaping. Property managers, if you manage it, they maintain it. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. Let's head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our buddy Charles Robinson to the program from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing this morning?
Awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, we brought up the Dallas Cowboys with you last week in terms of potential trade-up opportunities in the NFL draft. And now everywhere I look, the Dallas Cowboys are going to make some trades to move up in the NFL draft when it comes to some of these mock drafts. What do you make of, how prevalent the idea of the Dallas Cowboys trading up in the draft is and what that could mean in actuality when the draft comes around next week?
Yeah, it's interesting that when it happens, you see it pop up in a bunch of prominent mock drafts. Like, people you know are definitely connected, who are definitely talking to front offices and, agents, players, and whatnot. And then all of a sudden, in like the same week, almost in the same, couple of day rotation, you see these mock drafts push a trade to the top of the board. It tells you something is going on here, right? So either and you have to kind of choose your scenario, what you think is most likely, remembering that we're still 7-8 days when this all started to hit, 7-9 days from the draft. These mocks start pushing, Dallas up to 6 for Sonny Styles. And it means either someone inside the Cowboys made a mistake, started telling people how much they love a particular player, or telegraphed it in a way that the people doing the mocks are like, okay, it's clear they're definitely making some kind of move here. And Jerry's talked, Jerry Jones about there talking about potentially being aggressive and moving moving up and getting a player if the right player's there. So there's that. You could have the Styles camp, or let's just say it's any player. You could have their reps basically telling reporters, telling some of the people who do mocks, hey, he's not going to get past, this certain point. We've already had some conversations. We think it's going to happen. This team's going to come up and get him, which it might be true. It also might not be true. And they're trying to basically solidify, like, this player is definitely not going to get past a certain point. You're trying to almost engineer a kind of a floor and see if other teams are paying attention to, oh, Daniel Jeremiah is saying, Dallas is going to move up to 6 to get Sonny. So that means if we want Sonny, we either need to get to 6 or we need to get to, get to 5. So there's that. And, and then sometimes I think because there are a million mocks done before the draft comes, there starts to be some dot connecting as you get closer. And what drives, content, eyeballs on the content? The Cowboys do, right? And We talked last week about they're at least exciting because they have 2 first round picks. So it gives them the flexibility to move up ultimately if they want to. I will just tell you, I kind of threw water on this yesterday because in the process of doing the All Juice team and putting that together, I did speak with someone high up in the Dallas organization. It wasn't Jerry Jones. So, take that with a grain of salt. I was basically saying help me around the team out. Here's some things we're kind of looking for. Who are some players that, fit the criteria of this All Juice team? And we got into a conversation about how the first round, could unfold. And it was clear to me that this individual who's, definitely in the room, was like, look, there's value at the 2 first round picks we have. Felt like there's value, we can get to, contributing players in 2026. And, you know, the thought of contributing players in 2026 as rookies is like, hey, we think we can get a couple starters, you know, with these picks. And I felt like there was value there. So I, all of a sudden, I was like, man, maybe they're not, you know, this is not a scenario where they're going to move up, because if they think they can get, and they've had, they pick good players in these ranges. If you look at their draft history over the last 10 years, I kind of felt like they were going to stick. Now, again, I'm putting this team together. This is, you know, 2 weeks ago. You're really having a lot of these conversations. So can things certainly change in the last couple weeks before the draft boards are set? Yeah, sure. Absolutely. You get final pieces of information. You do the rest of your top 30 visits. And suddenly maybe you feel, okay, this is where we're going to adjust our shelf. So we need to make something happen here. But I don't know, man. When was the last time we've seen a trade nailed down 8, 9, 10 days before the draft, and then it actually comes to fruition? Like, I it's entertainment, you know. I think certainly the Cowboys could engineer it, but they also have a very top-heavy team in terms of salary, particularly if they end up signing, you know, George Pickens to a contract extension.
Yep.
All the money you pay at the top, you want, like, rookie salary starters. So giving up two rookie salary starters potentially is something you have to weigh.
Okay, Charles, I'm trying to think of the right way to ask this of you, because this is like a topic that could go on for hours. But, you know, insider culture in reporting in leagues. I mean, obviously, you know, you've been covering the NFL for a long time. You don't do, you know, you don't do daily, you know, whatever you want to call it. I mean, we've called Adam Schefter an info merchant, but it's like daily transactional reporting.
Yeah, I'm not grinding out like every, yeah, right. There's a difference.
And you know, and I want to be careful not to, like, you know, put everybody in the same bucket. But do you think it's a problem? Buster Olney talked this week just about the quid pro quo and the level to which it's risen overall in sports reporting. Like, is it something that concerns you?
I don't know. I guess, I mean, this is not just, there's been like insider relationship stuff, you know, in terms of how certain agents operate, how certain teams operate, for a really long time. So for me, I just shrug, like, at this point, because, you know, over the years, and again, it's how the world operates in the NFL. It's a sliding scale. You know, I can still remember, more than a decade ago, but I remember I had a really good source inside a team, and there was a signing that they literally had just gotten off the phone. It was done. They were, you know, they were going to do it and do an extension. And nearly the very top rung person in the room on the team side turned to someone on their PR staff and said, hey, go call this person. We're doing it. Let them know we're doing it. And the person I was speaking to was also in the room, had never heard that happen before. Like, the straight up, like, hey, we're going to do it. Go run it to this person. Like, let's get it out there. And they were shocked by it. And I was kind of like, eh, like, you know, I know there's a speed dial. Okay. There's a speed dial for agents. Reporters stack up a certain way. There's a speed dial for teams. Reporters stack up a certain way. I've had general managers. Within the last, let me see, probably within the last 3 years, I had a GM who straight up came to me and said, hey, our PR person told me not to break stories through you, like not to, you know, give you information on certain stuff and to give it to these guys instead. And it was, I say guys because it was other, like, literally other guys who were insiders. And that really pissed me off, because this was a person I'd had a really, really long relationship with, going well back before they were ever general manager. And, you know, I was kind of like, look, I have a serious, real source relationship with you. Like, if you want to do it that way, like, I get it. But, like, you know, does our, you know, all the trust we've built up over the years, does that transcend, you know, just this idea of we really should break it through these people because there's TV involved or whatever. And then when I say trust built up, so I'll give you a window into this. This is someone who I met years and years and years ago when they were on a lower rung for an NFL team. We got introduced through a mutual acquaintance, just to sort of like, you know, I was at an event. Hey, I'm a reporter. You know, this is my friend's reporter. This is so and so. And we struck up a conversation. We kept in touch. And at one time I was passing through town. This is before they got into the upper rungs of an organization. They're like, hey man, you want to, you know, let's grab dinner. You know, like I got to be home with my kids today, but you know, do you want to stop by? We can have dinner. I think there are some people who are like, wait, you went into this source's house and you had dinner, and like what's the line here? Like, at what point does something become inappropriate? And I think it's sort of, what is the quid pro quo, right? Just because I'm in this person's house and I'm having dinner and, you know, we're basically getting to this point where we can talk to each other about, you know, sharing information, what, you know, what's the trust that develops. In my mind, and I kept it true 100% with this person, if it comes to a point where I have to report things, I'm not going to not report things just because, you know, I had dinner with you in your house and you seem like a good person. And, you know, we have shared kind of mutual conversations about different things outside of football. You know, come time, got to write certain stuff. And it did come to a point, you know, later in that person's career where, you know, some negative things happened. I had to write very critically about it. And the, you know, the PR person inside that organization made sure to point out, like, I told you, like, this is, you know, just keep this in mind. Like, is this the person you really want to continue to trust when they're going to be critical about this? There's nothing I can do about that, right? So I would just say there's, you know, again, it's a sliding scale. Fans, I'm sure, presume that a lot of people out here, when you're dealing in information, there is an implied aspect of dealing. You are. You're trying to find out information. You're trying to provide context. And, you know, the people that have the information, it's not always going to be like, hey, yeah, sure, here, just let me tell you everything. You know, there's a negotiation that goes on. And I would say when you go to journalism school, there's a lot of these things they don't teach you about source building and, you know, information gathering. But you have to have your own compass, right? Like, you just can't. I know certain reporters, you know, the way in which they transact and, you know, how they gather information or the things that they'll, you know, not report on or whatever. You know, there are certain situations where I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't do that. Like, that's definitely not what I want to be. And, you know, I've always been very upfront with all the people that I deal with, like, hey, it's, you know, there's a line, and we'll know what the line is, and, you know, let's make sure that you understand that you can't redraw that just because I'm going to write something negative or there's a problem on your team.
So, Charles, the Jacksonville Jaguars last year moved up from number 5 to number 2 with the Browns. They gave up a second-round pick, a fourth-round pick, and a 2026 first-round pick in order to do it, to go grab Travis Hunter. And we saw it played out for Jacksonville last year. They won the division. I think Travis Hunter played in 7 games before he got hurt. And that was all she wrote. And the thinking behind that move was he could play both sides of the ball, and that's why you move heaven and earth to go get him. Well, it looks like he's going to be exclusively at corner for the Jags moving forward here. So what do you make of that? What do you make of a year into it, them basically deciding that he's going to play on one side of the ball? And how do you view that trade in the aftermath of that, knowing that a year in, they've already kind of, in some ways, abandoned their master plan for Travis Hunter here?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, just for context here, obviously Travis Hunter has come out since the report, you know, initially came out that, hey, they're shifting him primarily to cornerback. I saw that he responded online, sort of, you know, who told you that? Like, maybe he feels like it's news to him, which is not a shock because Travis Hunter made it clear throughout the draft process he really wanted to play both positions, believed he really could play both positions. I was in a Jaguars practice in the preseason. I saw him take a hit on the field, and he ended up being out of practice for a short time after that, and he was playing wide receiver. It was a wide receiver rep. And I thought to myself, okay, well, so you're repping on both sides of the ball, the chances are, you know, something like this is going to happen. Then obviously he suffers the non-contact, you know, knee injury, blows his knee out. And, you know, I think that definitely creates a thought process inside the Jaguars where it's like, okay, now we've lost immensely valuable time in his rookie season to a non-contact knee injury. There is the reality that he put up a bajillion snaps on his body in a couple of years at Colorado. Do we want to redefine how we're going to continue to approach this? And, you know, I talked to James Gladstone when I was there, and he was very honest in saying, like, hey, we're creating this plan as we go. It could change. Like, this idea that we're just going to hard and fast try to have him play, you know, max level snaps, or at least as max as possible at both positions, that might not hold. You know, we need to see how the plan unfolds. And I think that knee injury probably had a lot to do with it. And conventionally, whenever you talk to people in the front office about Travis Hunter, like, almost everybody said the same thing. If you're going to play him both ways, the position that is really requires his most attention is going to be corner, because there's just a lot of complexity. There's a lot of different things involved in it. He needs to be in those meetings. He needs to be studying corner. And then, you know, the ancillary, the secondary use for him can be wide receiver, because it's just the load that he would be carrying on at wide receiver is a lot easier to carry without having to be there 24/7. So I think, yeah, like, to me, even with Travis Hunter pushing back on this, like, I do think there will be an adjustment. It makes sense to me that there will be an adjustment, and that they'll see, you know, what they can put together with him at the cornerback spot. And in terms of the value of the trade, we can't know. Like, let's say that 3 years from now he's healthy and now he's playing at, like, a Patrick Surtain level. How do you feel about the trade? I'd be okay with it,
yeah.
Right? You know, how's Mason Graham playing, you know, for the Cleveland Browns? Now, I know they got Quinshon Judkins. There's a number of players that obviously the Browns got out of that trade. But if Hunter becomes the elite corner that people thought he could be if he just played played cornerback in the NFL, if he's a top five corner, I don't think you have any issues having traded up for a top five corner who maybe now and then you're sprinkling in, you know, some kind of an offensive package for him down the line. I just think the Jaguars know we lost a lot of time in development now in year one. It's going to be very, very, very important for us in year two to really drill it down into at least one of these positions and you know, get him back to where he should be. There's a lot of catch-up to be made at the cornerback spot.
So back on this draft, Charles, the Jets thing here, yeah, there's all, like, everybody's like, oh, they're definitely taking Bailey.
And oh, the Bailey visit.
Yeah, and then now, so now apparently he's not visiting. So,
right.
Like, to me, if he's not visiting and they take him, I find that to be astoundingly stupid. Like, why wouldn't you just take advantage of the time? Why wouldn't you have him in the building more? Like, this is going to be a foundational piece for you. Like, why not use it? Now if they're not, if they've decided, whatever, Arvo Reese is our guy, that's fine. Then don't tell me why you would not do the visit if you're going to take someone. Just because you're the Jets? Is that the answer? They're the Jets.
I don't. I would not say that, because I know there have been other teams that have canceled visits with guys they really like, and part of it is prioritizing their time and who they can get in. You know, and also it depends where the pick is. Like, the Jets have spent a lot of time on Bailey, and I think one of the things that fans don't know about visits, those visits are very, very heavily predicated, leaning into the players that you do have questions about, that where you're like, okay, we need to know this personality. We need to know, you know, just there's a multitude of things, and it requires us, you know, getting this player in here, getting him around the building, getting him with different people, and just sort of seeing, you know, how does that player, like, function in our building. And, you know, I remember telling you guys, you know, the kind of Baker Mayfield story when he was visiting a team, and he got walked down to a room to, you know, basically sit with an offensive coordinator and a quarterback's coach. And the person who was showing him around the room, showing him around the building, getting him to certain meetings, he started texting this person like pretty quickly after this person left the room, like, who am I seeing next or whatever. And the person who was bringing around the building's like, I just got you to the, like, what? Like, wait a minute, aren't you, like, you're in the meeting now. Like, are you? So the person went back and, you know, Baker wasn't really, it just didn't seem like Baker was like fully engaged in the moment. Like, he wasn't really like the, you know, quarterback's coach and the OC are like going over some things, and you could just kind of see his mind wasn't elsewhere. That's the kind of thing that I think sometimes teams want to see. Like, is this guy locked in? Like, is he, like, does he not like our organization? Does he not feel he's a fit? Like, you know, I think with Bailey, I would say that this to me is not a clear indicator that they're not taking him. I would say that they've probably spent more time on Bailey, Reese, you know, a handful of players that, you know, can be taken at number two, and they don't have questions on certain ones where they're like, we feel locked in. We've done, you know, we've got a mountain of work here. Bringing this player in is not going to show us anything more than we've already learned on our own, on the ground with our area scout. Like, how far back, you know, have they locked into him? I get it. I understand the sentiment, particularly when it's a pick like that and it's so valuable. It seems like you would want to do every single bit of last minute work, but I don't think it's often a guarantee that they're not going to take a player. You know, sometimes it's because they're like, we're good. Like, we don't, it doesn't take more of this to go through and figure out, you know, what ultimately we want to do with the pick in that player.
Oh, do you think they're taking him? Do you think he's their guy? Long sigh, deep sigh.
I mean, Joe, this draft, I'm being completely honest with you, especially when we're putting together the all-juice team, it's everybody is having a really hard time figuring out what's going to happen in this draft. And so I can't guarantee that, you know, the Jets are going to take him. But I did not think, oh, they canceled the 30 visit. That means they're definitely not taking him. You know, and sometimes teams cancel visits, like purposely cancel visits, that they knew they were going to cancel because they want the headline out there. We canceled the visit, you know, and to create whatever they want, you know, to create maybe the idea that, hey, maybe two is open for business. Maybe we're not locked in on a player. And if you want to come try to get somebody at number two, give us a call, because this player you thought for sure we were taking, now we cancel the visit. So it sort of, you know, it conveys this message that maybe we're open for shop when we aren't, you know, but let's see. Let's see if we get somebody crazy, you know, wanting to move up. I have very little comfort, you know, saying this team is taking this guy other than Mendoza. And even now, like, I feel like in the last 24 hours, I hear people who are like, well, I don't know, Spytek said this. Maybe they're not taking Mendoza. What about the Kirk Cousins deal? And I'm like, oh my God, I'm like, really, we're going to do this all the way, you know, to the very, you know, top of the draft. Like, this guy we've known forever has been locked in. Now they're not going to take him. I know that's not what Titans fans want to hear. They want to know, you know, who's going to be coming off the board in front of them. But, you know, I would just say buckle up, because I swore there was no way Caleb Downs gets outside the top 10, like no way whatsoever. And yet you will still talk to people who will go through the whole idea of like, okay, well, he's a safety and high end safeties have been found, you know, at much more reasonable picks than a top 10 pick in the past. You know, look where the Lions got Brian Branch, you know, look at where Kirby Joseph got drafted. Look at, you know, Kyle Hamilton wasn't even a top 10 pick. I still can't believe that with Caleb Downs. You know, he's just, it was by far every team felt like he was on, when you looked and watched this tape, he was as clean as he could possibly get, whether it was, you know, playing for Ohio State or Alabama.
So, Charles, last thing for you here. We saw the Washington Commanders come out with their jersey rebrand yesterday, which is essentially the Washington Redskins kind of redubbed in a Commanders uniform. Yeah. We've seen the Titans, right? Like, the Titans have come out with their rebrand, and boy, those jerseys look pretty similar to the Houston Oilers jerseys back in the day. Yeah. I watch, you know, every given NFL Sunday where there's throwback jerseys, like those Eagles throwbacks are sweet, Seahawks throwbacks are sweet, Patriots. Like, so are we seeing teams, I guess, lean more into jerseys of years gone by, of the past, and Do you like that? Do you like the way that NFL jerseys seem to be trending right now of kind of embracing the past?
Right. What was the Nora Ephron line? Everything is copy. We just keep doing the same things over and over again over a long enough timeline. I love, like, Frank Schwab and I had this conversation on the pod yesterday, and he was saying, you know, go back and watch games in like 94. He's like, the whole league looked better. He's like, the jerseys all look better. And you're kind of like, is that just nostalgia? You know, when you grow up watching football, you know, you probably love it more blindly and deeply than ever when you're a kid and you're, you know, first getting exposed to NFL football. Or, I don't know, man, I go back to like the Deion Sanders, Andre Rison, Falcons unis. I'm like, they're filthy. They're beautiful. Like the all blacks and,
I mean, those like 80s and early 90s Broncos jerseys are some of the best in sports.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Right. Yeah. They look, look absolutely awesome.
And now their uniforms suck.
But what did they, how many of those sucky uniforms have they sold? And now they're like, okay, these probably aren't selling as well. Let's turn back the clock to what, you know, we used to wear. No, I mean, Joey grew up watching the Lions. I still, whenever I see the old uniforms, I see Barry Sanders, right? I see Barry Sanders in the hole, you know, juking. And it's a good memory. And I'll ask you this. This is the thing. And by the way, I think the Commanders jerseys look awesome. Like the second I saw them, like, oh, I hate talking about jerseys, but these are pretty amazing. They're so clean. Not a ton of like lettering and logoing on it. The helmet, though, with the arrow, got the arrow in it. It's like, what do you think about that? Because I'm like, man, they're pushing it. let's see how close we can get back.
Well, I told Joe off the air this morning. Yeah, I was like, they want to be the Washington Redskins again without calling themselves that. That's what they want.
Without calling them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That definitely felt like a wrinkle where I'm like, oh, yeah, they're trying to get a little closer to that. Like, how close can they get?
As close as they can possibly get.
Yeah. Yeah, without completely reverting back to the nickname and the jerseys. But, right now, like you guys said, I still think, like, less is more. And Joe and I went through the era of the Detroit Pistons wearing teal jerseys with a frickin' horse on it. And I'm like, oh,
horrific.
My God. Like, just the worst decision ever. I mean, I like it. I don't know. You guys, do you have a problem with them?
No, I love them.
Classic. Yeah. Classic is always better, man. And some teams don't ever change, like the Tigers and Red Wings, for example, have never changed their uniforms, and there's a reason you don't. Yeah.
Pretty good.
But, hey, you got to sell, man. You got to figure out how to sell. And at one point in Detroit, you know, teal and a horse on your jersey was the thing.
With Grant Hill on the back.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh, God, man. Yeah, Grant Hill. I mean, for all those great years, they're all that crappy teal jersey.
Oh, man. Just amazing. Well, Charles, great stuff as always, my man. We appreciate you taking time to be with us. And next week when we talk, the NFL draft will be here. So we are closing
one
in.
1 week. Yeah. Thank goodness. Looking forward to it. That'll be fun. I always like the Thursday on the doorstep conversation. So, looking forward to it, guys.
Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Charles Robinson with us every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock here on the program. We will react to what Charles had to say coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Ian Safar here with you. Joe Rexroad off conducting business, as they say. He'll be back with us on the
Busy
program
man
tomorrow.
That, Joe.
Busy man, Joe Rexroad. I got some tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to Team Boxing League as Nashville Smash taking on Phoenix Fury at the Municipal Auditorium coming up tomorrow night. Be caller number two, rapid fire. Caller two, 615-737-1025. You'll win a pair of tickets to Team Boxing League coming up tomorrow night at Municipal Auditorium. Appreciate Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for being with us in the last segment. The Dallas Cowboys thing going to be very interesting to monitor when draft time comes around. We mentioned it to begin the show. Jeff Howe came out with a piece at The Athletic, and the title of it was Why Teams Should Select Notre Dame's Jeremiah Love No Matter His Position Value. And we went through some of that. A lot of this isn't new. We've talked about running back, positional value, what that's going to look like. You know, one scout in this story did say, quote, Jeremiah Love really special. He's not far off from a Saquon Barkley type of impact. He's going high. And one of the things throughout this process – that we've been trying to nail down is, all right, we all know Jeremiah Love's good, right? Like, you watched him play at Notre Dame. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that he's a really good player, and he's probably going to be a really good back in the league. How good are we talking, right? And we had Bruce Feldman on a few months ago, I guess a couple months ago at this point, and we brought up the Ashton Jeanty comparison with him. And he's like, you know, I liked Ashton Jeanty. Jeremiah Love's better than Ashton Jeanty, right? So it's like, okay, well, that's good. So are we talking Bijan Robinson? Are you talking Saquon Barkley? Like, what exactly over the backs we've seen drafted recently in the NFL that have gone high? What are we looking at here with Jeremiah Love? And, you know, with at least one scout talking about, you know, not far off from a Saquon Barkley type of impact. I mean, that could be a really intriguing thing if you're the Titans, if that's the level of player, the level of prospect that he could be. So, like, you hear that as a Titans fan, and you're like, well, that on the offensive side of the ball, with the offensive side of the ball right now being short on weapons when you're looking at their wide receiver room, and we've talked about the questions that they got on the offensive line, you know, a close to Saquon Barkley type of impact coming from college to the NFL, I think you'd sign up for if you're a Titans fan. Now, the other interesting part of that is, and Ian and I were talking about this over the break here, is that the best use of your spot, right? Because 5 years from now, what's that going to look like? Like, Saquon Barkley, it's a great pick by the Giants. He ain't there anymore.
He gone.
Right. Like, they chose not to re-sign him. Now, that was pretty stupid when you saw what he did the year after, right? And he, you know, ran for 2,000 yards and was a big part of Philadelphia getting to the Super Bowl. So I'm sure that's a decision that the Giants probably regret in the aftermath of that. But you're still talking about a guy who was drafted really high, and he spent a grand total of 6 years with the New York Giants. And that's what this is in the NFL right now. So, like, you'd be hard-pressed to tell me, Ian, that if they drafted like a David Bailey, let's say David Bailey is there at four, and the Titans drafted him. I mean, unless he's just a total flame-out, which, you know, could happen, but I have my doubts. You got a hard time convincing me he ain't going to be there in 5, 6, 7 years now for the Titans, right?
Yeah.
At running back, yeah. I mean, you think Jeremiah Love's going to be there, but you don't know how it's going to go at that position.
As far as the edge rusher goes, I mean, you lock your own guys up before they hit the free agency.
Yeah.
You know, they show that they can produce, and they get a new contract, and they get a second contract. And there hasn't been too many Titans lately that get big second contracts here with the team. So long term, you could probably argue who has a bigger impact on the team positively for next season, Jeremiah Love at the running back or David Bailey at edge. I think you could probably make an argument either way,
yep,
that those two could both make equally positive impacts next season quickly. What about in the next 5 years?
Right.
You know, it's tough because are you playing for now or are you playing for the long term? With the fourth overall pick, do you feel like you need to get a building block kind of guy? That you need as a foundational player for the next 10 years for your team? And if that's so, I feel like David Bailey or Styles or the edge might fit that profile better than a running back.
Well, it's interesting because on the one hand, I mean, I agree with you. On the one hand, though, if you're a general manager, it's like, you know, how much looking down the road 6, 7 years do you really do, right? Like, you know, this is such a
– it's more win,
you know,
now.
It's a 2-3-year league, right? Like, I think that's kind of how you got to view it. I mean, and still, the backdrop of all of this is if Cam Ward doesn't work out, if you're Mike Borgonzi, and you're probably not going to be here, right?
And like, that
you kind of tied yourself to him.
And that kind of maybe takes precedent over everything.
Yeah.
What can you – best help Cam Ward, because if he can't develop to what he needs to be, you're, you know, SOL as it is.
Yeah.
So maybe it is just about what can we do to get Cam Ward developed? What can we do to get him to take the next step? And I think you can make that argument Jeremiah Love is the best player for Cam Ward as far as getting him to that next step and comfortable.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
And even that, so that might even, you know, that maybe that does become the best long-term plan if it ends up, even though Jeremiah Love isn't on your team in 5 years, what it did for Cam Ward still made it worth it.
Well, and it is interesting. Like, you're looking at, we mentioned Barkley, so he was there for 6 years with the Giants. you know, McCaffrey was there with Carolina for 6 years. Now they traded him. So in both instances, you're talking, you know, one team let Barkley go in free agency and another team traded him to San Francisco. But it's still, like, it's two pretty darn high-level, high-drafted running backs that those teams that drafted them got a grand total of 6 years out of them. Like, that's what you're looking at. So it doesn't have to be that way with Jeremiah Love. You know, like, think about Henry. Like, Derrick Henry was here. He's, I mean, he wasn't as highly drafted as those guys, but you're talking about 8 years. Like,
that's what you
for
would
a running back, that's a long time.
Yeah,
right?
You would need something like that to make it worthwhile, I would think. Unless he really does turn it around for Cam Ward, maybe it would be worth it just to keep him for his rookie contract and see what happens. But fourth overall pick, just the potential of a long-term building block is, you know, interesting how they'll try and parse this back and forth here.
615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. More discussion on Jeremiah Love and the NFL draft coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Discussing Jeremiah Love and the NFL draft, which is 1 week from today, Ian Safar. So we are a week away.
We're almost there, huh?
Getting close.
Feels like we're a professional team here, going over every possible scenario at pick four, doing all of our work, and now we just have to wait and see how the board unfolds here.
That's right. One texter says, how effective is a generational running back talent like Love going to be with a pitiful offensive line? Well, first off, I hope the offensive line's not pitiful.
It wasn't pitiful last year.
Well, and, you know, obviously there are huge question marks at center and right guard right now. And hopefully either one of two things happens. Either you find somebody at one or both spots here in the draft that can come in as a rookie and fill those roles nicely. Or, you know, like a Schlotman at center is adequate at that spot, right? And you have Slater come in at right guard, and the Titans have been developing him for the last year, and he comes in and fills the role nicely. You know, hopefully something like that happens. But on the other part of that is, like, you need – I think you're feeling pretty good about Skoronski and the player that he is. You need Latham to be an asset for you this year, a weapon for you this year. So they better not have a pitiful offensive line. If they do, well, I don't even know if I want to get into what happens if they do with those discussions again, because good grief. But I just – when you look at the way that this has played out with the offensive line, I can't go to another season of talking about bad offensive line play. And I will say this, like, most of my concerns on the offensive line are probably more pass blocking related right now than they are run blocking related.
Yeah.
So hopefully that would mean good things for Jeremiah.
Especially
Love
with
too.
The tackles.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. The main door swings wide open sometimes pass blocking. But hey,
Latham, take a next step with a new coach, maybe?
Maybe so.
We'll see.
Maybe so. One texter says, thank God the draft is almost here. We've only been talking about it since October. That is the downside of being a 3-14 football team. We've had a lot of time to discuss the NFL draft, and we were talking off the air yesterday. It's about time for the draft to get here. We've hit that point of the NFL offseason.
That's the worst thing about being covering the Titans right now, is all you do is talk about the offseason. You can't even talk about the season.
Yeah,
it's just over so quickly. The weekly matchups don't even matter so quickly into the season, and you're already talking big picture, you're talking offseason, you're talking roster, and it is a little tiresome.
Well, it is.
So, you know, but hey, we appreciate you guys hanging in with us.
We do, and 1 week from today, it'll all get started.
Yeah.
I'll say this. It was interesting to hear Charles talk earlier about the David Bailey situation with the Jets.
I saw a post from Schefter that kind of hinted at the same thing.
Yeah.
That, hey, the Jets don't really have any questions about David Bailey.
Okay.
And thus, this is why they are not bringing him in for a top 30 visit.
Well, let's quickly play that out. Let's say they go Bailey at 2, and the Cardinals go offensive tackle at 3, and you've got Reese there at 4. I'd take him. That's probably what I would do at that point. I know
I would take Reese.
You know, Kuharski's brought up you've already got Oladejo, who doesn't he wasn't necessarily a straight up pass rusher all of his college career. And Reese is the same thing. But sometimes the physical tools kind of outweigh all that. So either way, we're a week away from finding out what happens at number four for the Tennessee Titans. That's going to do it for us today here on the show. Preds wrap up their season tonight against the Anaheim Ducks. We'll be back to discuss it all tomorrow. Hope everybody has a wonderful rest of their day. Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.